Hello and welcome back to the Jolly Boys podcast. How are we doing, guys? You okay?
How you doing, Ed?
Kushti.
How are you doing, right?
Doing Kushti.
Not too bad, not too bad. So, what episode are we going to be talking about today?
Today we're talking about Series 2, Episode 1. We're finally on Series 2 and we're talking about the long legs of the law.
I think that's... We should probably explain why we're not doing Christmas crackers.
Yeah, good idea.
I think... Well, we've all decided, if that's all right with you listeners, that the Christmas episodes, it's going to seem really odd doing them throughout the summer, because eventually we will get to more Christmas episodes as well. But we're going to do them as little specials, so Bailey might do a little Twitter poll, or if there's a special occasion coming up, one of our birthdays, something like that.
I think it makes sense to do Christmas at Christmas.
I think
our listeners would like
that. Yeah, of course, yeah. It feels a bit weird. I'm sat here in my shorts now. It feels a bit weird talking about Christmas crackers now.
Yeah,
I can't pretend I'm eating a turkey.
You got your top off as well, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
So this is a bit of a turning point in our podcast in regards to the audio equipment we use.
Yeah.
I understand we've got a new mixer, guys.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a headache. The last episode we did, I was nearly in tears after we lost half our decent material.
We had a good crack, though.
Yeah, we did. And then also halfway through our interview with Anthony Costa, here's one of the mics went down. So we've had to... some serious investment, haven't we, guys?
Well, by investment, what we did was we went to the Shamrock Club and we stole this new mixer.
Yeah.
And hopefully we sound a bit cushy.
It's Algerian.
On the subject of interviews, who are we interviewing on today's podcast?
Yeah, sure. So today we've got someone really special, someone who I thought we'd never, ever get. I've mentioned before in previous podcasts that I think probably all four of us, or at least three of us, have been to conventions, several conventions in the past, and we've not actually had a chance to meet this actor. And I'm really, really pleased to announce that we've got Mr. Daniel Peacock, who played Mental Mickey Maguire in It's Only Rock and Roll, joining us on our podcast today to give us a chat and tell us a bit about his time on Only Fools and Horses.
And what a nice guy he is as well.
And what a coo, Rodney, what a coo.
Yeah, he's a really, really... Yeah, he's a fantastic guy. I'm just so pleased that he, you know, we got him on for a chat, really, because he's one of those actors I thought we'd never be able to get hold of. He's very busy. You know, he's very busy with directing, writing. You know, he does a lot of comedy stuff.
No, but it was a great interview and really insightful. I answered a few unanswered questions for me, especially about the Top of the Pop scene on that episode, which I always wondered if it was actually filmed. But stay tuned to find out what actually happened then.
I was actually hoping that halfway through the interview he would stop us and say, "Oi, I do the 1, 2, 3, 4
I think we counted him to a quote.
No, well, we counted him in to start the interview, and I don't think any of us had the balls to sort of go.
No, he sounds quite scary.
It was too early in the conversation to quote him.
He did give us a quote though, didn't he, towards the end?
Oh yeah, magical moment.
So stay tuned to hear how that one goes.
And he also did say some really, really lovely things about working on set with David Jason, which is definitely worth sticking around to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
It just confirms what we already knew, really, about the family feel from everyone seems to think. Everyone who's appeared on this podcast, has been on the show, seems to think it's one big family. What do you guys think? Did you, as we're recording this on Sunday, did you guys read the interview about Nicholas Lyndhurst today? Nicholas Lyndhurst?
Yes.
What do you think? It's good, isn't it? Yeah, I read it this morning.
I did, yeah.
I haven't got round to it yet, but don't worry about spoilers, guys. Tell me all about it.
It's quite an interesting read, isn't it? I think I don't know. I know you shouldn't believe everything that you read necessarily, and I put my hand up and admit that I read it on the Daily Mail, so I don't know how reliable that is as a source.
It's an interview. It was quotes. It was an actual interview. Because he's starring in a West End production, and obviously for a bit of promotion, he's given an interview.
Right, okay.
It's not just in the Mail, it's in multiple...
Okay,
so it is actually an interview.
Well, it's quite an interesting interview, isn't it? And I think it's quite sad. I read it and it sort of came across with quite a sad vibe.
It's not very humble. I mean, it's no secret he's quite a private person. He doesn't attend the annual convention, which is fine, you know. But he doesn't come across that humble, does he?
No.
Well, he doesn't like the fame at all, does he? The whole fame just doesn't appeal to him.
You don't have to like the fame, but it's just how he's come across in that interview with his affection for the show. He said he never rewatches the episodes. He hasn't for years. He says he's quite morbid, wouldn't he? He says if he watches it, it just reminds him of the people who've passed on, which
Yeah, which is fair enough, because I probably feel the same if I've been working with those people for that amount of time and seeing them back on television now.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really, really touching and quite sad what he was saying about Leonard Pierce, about the VHS recorder.
Yeah.
So there's the part in the interview where Nicholas Lyndhurst and Leonard Pierce, I don't know, must have been working together on Series 1 just when they started to introduce video recorders, VHS players. And then Nicholas Lyndhurst will always remember when Leonard Pierce says that they'll live forever because, you know, because of this new technology.
Do you think we'll live forever, Rodney?
I think, but people react differently to, you know, if you've been in a series and you work with people who have passed away, you're either going to be a Nicholas Lyndhurst where you just can't watch it again, or you're going to be someone else who would look back on it fondly and go, those are the good times. But he just didn't come across very friendly, in my opinion.
I think he did to me.
Not to me. Not the worst people out there, Nicholas Lyndhurst. He just didn't come across as... If I saw him walking down the street, I probably wouldn't approach him.
I think he was probably just being honest, I think, because he's probably been asked that question a million times before, and I think he's just probably giving honest answers. You know, he doesn't like fame, he never has, and he has spoken about him being quite a shy, reserved person anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that's what he's trying to say, really.
A large majority of the people that we've interviewed on this podcast, they all refer to the Unforced Horses as a family, don't they? So that's probably why it hurts a bit. Yeah, you're right what you say about he's quite shy. You wouldn't see him on the likes of the Graham Norton Show or Jonathan Ross.
No.
You know, he's not that type of personality, but, you know, I quite like him for that, to be fair.
Yeah, I think it makes a change, really.
He was quite young, wasn't he, when he started in Only Fools and Horses? Yeah. So, you know, it must have been pretty difficult for him. And we do know during the scene of strained relations where Nicholas and David broke down crying during the funeral scene, which is quite moving, isn't it? Quite an emotional scene to watch. So, yeah, it must have been difficult for him to be watching it all back now.
I think UK Gold are replaying Butterflies, his first series.
Adam.
First acting role that he had.
I love his hair in that. It's absolutely awesome.
It's really quite a funny character, actually, isn't that? It's almost, you can imagine it actually being Rodney. I know, obviously, it is the same, effectively the same person, but character-wise.
If Rodney was middle class.
Yeah.
And he does try to act middle, well, not middle class, but he does try to
mingle.
Have a bit of decorum about him, doesn't he, in the series.
Especially with Victoria.
My opinion is, didn't come across that brilliantly in that article. That's just how I read it.
I don't know. I think I disagree. I think he came across quite well. I think there's nothing in there really that we didn't know.
Mm.
He likes his privacy. I think a lot of stuff came out in the 90s about his dad who left when he was 8 because he'd been...
That's sad, yeah. But I just think he doesn't seem that fond.
But he's not bitter about it at all.
No.
He said, I just never...
I'm strictly referring to his, you know, the Fools and Horses segments of that reference rather than his sad upbringing.
Still, never mind, eh? No. Well, I was just going to say, today is, or this podcast is like a milestone. We finished Series 1.
Yes.
Well, 99% finished. We'll do the Christmas Crackers episode at Christmas, but we're about to start Series 2. A new chapter, new series, new characters. I'm really looking forward to this one. It starts to develop.
But shall we crack on with Long Legs of the Law?
Yeah.
Let's hit the play button and... see where it goes.
Long Legs of the Law. It's good to be on Series 2.
Does it feel different to Series 1?
Yeah,
to you?
Already. It does. It feels like we've turned a corner.
Mm.
And the characters really start to come into their own, don't they?
There are mostly... In Series 2, one main plot. Because in Series 1, we used to say, there's not too much to talk about because there's one thing going on at any one time. And this is the same for this episode. It's not really a side thing going on from memory. Ultimately, it's Rodney dating a police officer and the consequences of it. Still, it's still already got a different feel. And like you say, the characters are nice and established now, aren't they?
Yeah, Del Boy's just walked into the flat with a folded Financial Times and a copy of Mayfair, I believe. Good magazine, that.
So why has Del Boy got granddad's false teeth? I don't understand. Did he just pick them up? Did he slyly pick them up off the counter as he walked in, or did he walk out with them?
I was always under the impression that he hid them on purpose, because Dale was a bit of a prankster, isn't he?
That's a bad prank, because he just literally left the flat with some false teeth either in his pocket.
Maybe he just... Granddad's a bit dopey and he just couldn't remember where they were, and he's innocently found them. But I can also imagine Dale would have hid them. It's not the first time he's played a prank on Granddad before, is it?
No.
So at the end of... When was this series filmed, Tom?
Because
82.
October.
So they immediately got a second series. They didn't think they were going to get a second series, did they?
Well, it's just over a year from the first series. So there's only 6 episodes that are aired, and it can take a long time for them to commission a second series, and that still would have been a good 6-7 months before they started recording.
So Rodney's now regaling a tale of their night out the night before. They went on a date, a double date, didn't they? I think Dale obviously stitched him up and picked a nice one.
Yeah. Well, no, he went out with... Rodney assumed he'd be going out with... It was the mother and daughter, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
And Dale shows up with the daughter.
Typical Dale.
Grandad's getting excited at the prospect of the birds coming back to the flat.
Like he's got any chance dressed like that.
Dale boy's drinking his tea from a saucer.
It's quite an East End thing to do. Isn't it?
Do people still do that? I mean, do people still drink teas with a saucer as well?
I still, as a kid.
Grandad is playing, showing a lot of interest in their love life. He isn't up to much in the flat, is he? So this is, you know, a bit of gossip for him.
Well, that's how him and Albert fell out, wasn't it? And that's why they didn't talk for years, because they fell out over a woman.
Oh, yeah, that's right. How do you think that if Albert... and Grandad were, you know, obviously we know they were never in the same episode, but how do you think they would have got on? Do you think it would have been...
It's strange, isn't it? I think they would have clashed, because they're two totally different personalities, aren't they?
Yeah, it would have been a little bit like when, obviously in the Christmas episode where Dale's dad comes back. It would have been a little bit like that, but then one of them's not an arsehole. Neither of them are arseholes. Oh, I can't really say that, can I?
No, but it's like, I imagine that Albert would be like, you know, when Knock Knock, when they're competing for Marlene's mum, and he goes a bit like you know, what's it called,
alpha male,
yeah, he goes a bit alpha male, doesn't he?
When you reference Albert saying that he fell out with his brother over a woman, did he mean Ted or did he mean George? Because I can't remember the quote from that TV3 episode. Jumping ahead there,
I'm lost, sir.
I'm not entirely sure.
That bread that Dale's just picked up looks amazing. It looks like a slice of cake.
Yeah, it does.
Look at that.
Bit of lemon drizzle on it.
I think that's just a big piece of bread with butter on it.
Getting out the watches now.
They still look really premium, don't they? Even for Dale, like, they do look quite kosher.
If you were walking down the street, and Dale boy was selling that to you, would you buy any of his stuff?
Well, if I was on a budget, I probably would. If you're in if you're in that part of London and you haven't got a lot of money, you probably are going to do what you can to save a few bob.
Oh, yeah, of course, but...
Lennox Gilby did.
Has there anything that he's sold you thought, actually, that's quite good?
I had to think about that. Bailey?
I was going back to what Ed said, actually. Quite interesting. I wonder if this episode does happen to tie up with Lennox Gilby in his watch. Maybe he met Dale... around the same sort of time and bought a watch from him and gives him more
than a watch. I don't know. I reckon Dale Boy sold more watches. So he was selling it into Hollenbach.
Yeah, to Hollenbach,
yeah. It's got a scratch on it.
It's all right, I'll get it back to the van.
That's crap, mate. That's crap.
Yeah.
Well, told me that when you sold it to me. Huh. Final Times.
Only the Shawaddy Waddy LPs, probably, you know. They're all right.
So it looks like the Mayfair magazine was for Rodney.
Mm. Obviously, that wouldn't be accepted in these days, that, you know, sexism and, you know, that...
What, Financial Times?
Yeah.
What's one of the most significant parts of this scene? So we're in Sid's calf. What's the most significant
part? Steals all the cutlery?
More along the lines of characters.
Well, Sid looks so young.
It's his first appearance.
Is this his first?
Yeah.
Nice to see him in there, isn't it?
Now, the idea for this script was based on John Sullivan's niece. She worked as a policewoman.
Oh, right.
And that's, from what I can read, that's all he got the idea from. And he can develop a script like that.
Going back to see, you and I, Tom, met Roy Heather, didn't we? Yeah, back in 2010.
Ashton Gate.
That's
2010
years.
Or 2009?
Oh, yeah, it might be 2009. Yeah. But he was a lovely chap, wasn't he? He was getting on a bit then, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
But fair play to him, though, to be able to sit there for how many hours was it he was signing for?
Probably close to 12 hours,
constant,
I imagine.
Constant 12 hours of signing for a man. And how old do you think he was? 80, mid-80s?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's when it's really badly, badly coordinated as well, and there's just thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was suffering with arthritis or something, wasn't he? So he was finding it difficult to keep up, but he did.
Is he a smoker in real life? And that's an irrelevant question.
I think he was.
I got no idea. I can't comment on that.
Another bit of obvious trivia, I'm sure, but this series 2 kicks off with the what we now know as the main intro, sung by John Sullivan, whereas the original VHS release had the...
that's right.
Rayman Tom's back again.
But yeah, if they replay that on, you know, one of the channels, they'll play Sullivan's intro,
yeah,
which is fine. But
true story, this, when I first started watching Only Fools and Horses from an early age, I was 100% adamant the theme tune was sung by Nicholas Lyndhurst or Rodney Trotter. Mm,
yeah.
And even though now I know it's sung by John Sullivan, every time I hear it, it's still Nicholas Lyndhurst singing it.
It's uncanny, isn't it?
It's absolutely mad. But yeah, I still hear it. It's Nicholas Lyndhurst every time I watch it.
Can I just ask, is Sid in Rock and Chips, is he one of the lads? He's not the same age, is he, as Dale and Denzel and that?
No, he doesn't feature from memory in Rock and Chips.
No, he's the same sort of generation as Uncle Al, isn't he? So
yeah.
I'm just thinking, Del was prepared to steal from Sid now, seeing the cap with all the cutlery.
Yeah, it's a bit off, isn't it? But
yeah,
we're getting a, more of a flavour of what Del's like, aren't we?
Maybe Del knew that Sid was insured or something, so if it did happen, maybe he could get better cutlery or something. I'm sure Del's always got a plan for that.
He would have sold it back to him, wouldn't he, at some point? It would have got back to him.
He would have sold him that cutlery in a Royal Flash, wouldn't he?
Yeah. They just found out now that Rodney's taken a policewoman out, which put shame on the family.
Just to go back a bit, aren't you impressed how much he's consumed in that calf?
Yeah, he's had
a ridiculous amount.
What do you have?
Heartburn for the rest of the year.
Double egg, sausages.
Just everything, but in large quantities.
That's what people used to eat back then, though, because they weren't aware of the consequences, were they?
No. It's not just a large breakfast. It's king size with extras and then biscuits and...
Yeah, you would, though. I remember eating that sort of stuff when I was younger. I'd just eat loads of stuff.
Mm.
Hence why they call it the fatty thumb.
Yeah.
So Grandad and Del look incredibly worried about Rodney's date.
It's a huge concern for Del.
Do you think there's a character flaw in Rodney's character with him taking a police officer out on a date, but as well as that, bringing her back to her house when he knows full well that it's all full of stolen stuff? Although, I know Del tries to hide the fact that the watches are stolen, that Rodney must know there's other things in that flat which are not legal.
I think the idea is Rodney's... Del treats Rodney as this young, naive kid brother. And yeah, Rodney might understand certain things a pinch, but he probably doesn't. He's too much. He falls in love easily. He just doesn't think about the office, I suspect.
Yeah, he thinks that his date will just turn a blind eye. Hence why he's like, I bought you a doner kebab tonight.
She's off shift. She won't say anything. And there's nothing major that we've nicked there. And then, of course, the watches are probably the... considered the most priceless thing in that flat, probably.
In Rodney's mind, she's female, she wears a uniform to work, and she might sleep with him.
Mm. Mm.
So Del and Grandad are giving Rodney the cold shoulder.
Drop the keys, tell him he's dead to him, and then tell him those roads will be treacherous tonight. Drive carefully.
As a very young sprog watching the earlier Only Fools and Horses, and I mean quite young, 6, 7, 8, When we're introduced to Sandra, I did get confused with Cassandra and Sandra, and to me they kind of look the same, sort of.
When I got to my youngster.
You know, Cassandra's not introduced for another five seasons series.
You've broken your own season series rule. It's to be called seasons. No, it's too American. Apologies to our American listeners. The actress who plays Sandra is called Kate Saunders, and she's a journalist now. No, she's not. Well, she's a part journalist, but she writes novels.
Oh, really?
She hasn't appeared in anything since the mid-80s.
I wonder if she was like a friend of John Sullivan or...
I think she started out in acting.
Hmm. Where did she?
But in a very small way, but she clearly got a big break.
Well, she got a Wendy house. Different pictures on the wall.
It's quite a sort of tense little argument they're having now, aren't they? Because Dale really is sort of hurt by the fact his brother would go stoop low to bring back a policewoman.
Snide, we're going to get you, Snide.
Dale Boy has always tried to keep the police at arm's length. He's always been sort of polite to them and helps them out and tries to keep them on side. But the last thing he wants is the possibility of having a sister-in-law who's works for the police.
Rodney does it again, doesn't he? With Slater. He doesn't know Slater, does he? But he brings him back. That's another copper back to the flat.
We're having another bit of a flashback argument, aren't we? A bit like in Big Brother, where he's saying he's always been there for him since Mum died, and just reminding him, you know, he's been there for him, and Rodney's ungrateful little git.
It's a good way of reminding the audience that of the relationship they got.
Yeah, because no doubt there was a gap between the end of Series 1 and the start of Series 2, so you've got new people tuning in, watching this. So I think John Sullivan was just reminding the listeners a bit of a backstory of the brothers, and that Dale's always been there from an early age for Rodney, so... just having a bit of a pop in the flat to remind them.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, Shane.
We just missed a great gag about the Roy Taylor's roller skates.
Yeah. He got you some roller skates just like Roy Taylor's.
What do you mean they were Roy Taylor's? Just like Roy Taylor's.
Oh, you messed that up, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I go everywhere tonight.
I'm sure. Right, I'm going to have to break the duck here and say that Rodney's looking smart. He's looking very smart for his date. Looking quite sharp, isn't he?
Yeah, he does look smart. I don't know if that was considered to be unfashionable then.
Yeah, I think it'd be quite...
But it looks quite smart now, doesn't it? Weirdly.
He scrubs up quite well, considering in the previous series, he's more sort of UK anarchist punk driven, isn't he?
I think already, though, like, for this new series, as it was, 82... The characters are already a little bit different. They're already portraying Dale, Rodney and Grandad slightly differently to Series 1.
Yeah, I agree. They're a lot more settled though in Series 2. And I think that they don't really change again until sort of Series 5, maybe even Series 6.
Because between Series 5 and 6 is about 3 or 4 years, and they're obviously that much older, and it makes sense that their personalities would develop a bit more. Rodney's, what, 20? So the 23, 24, even though the actor at the time was 19, 20. Dale really is just not happy with this, the whole date thing. He's thinking the worst, isn't he? Like, you're going to have a police woman, it's going to do our family, isn't it?
But at the end of it, he tells Rodney to, after he's told him he's dead, has he said he's dead to him?
As far as I'm concerned, you don't exist.
You don't exist, I guess. It's been raining, those roads will be treacherous. Drive carefully.
Yeah.
Rodney gives a little wry smile, like, he doesn't mind. He'll be all right.
Dale Boy showing his care inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his slapstick acting skills with the beer.
Blood's thicker than blondes and all that.
And Dale obviously sits up all night, anxious, what's happened to Rodney.
He does, because we're going to have the scene coming up where Rodney to bring back this date, does he? And then there's the panic ensues that he's got to hide things.
He's done what?
And I remember feeling the panic for Dale, thinking, oh my God, he's going to get found out for everything's ever nicked right now. Yeah. He's going to go down. And the sheer panic. And when we get to that scene, there's nothing subtle about how Dale tries to hide the watches.
But then he's acting so suspicious.
I know.
It's like, you could probably play a bit cool.
Yeah.
And also, when a little bit later on, Sandra says, I recognise some of the items from our CID files. Like, who's taking pictures of that?
Well, the question I was going to just ask then
was she didn't mention anything. She's off duty, but as a police officer, I imagine you're always on duty all the same. She doesn't mention anything, but it's only when we see later Rodney takes her back to her flat, she snaps at him and says, look, this is, you know, I could do you for a lot of things right now, but...
They're obviously both quite concerned, because I don't think they'd both be awake now, normally.
No. They've got matchsticks in their eyes, trying to stay awake, see what happens. Yeah. They want to hear the gossip.
Well, they want to hear that it was a terrible date. Mm. That's what Delboy wants to hear.
Rodney bringing back the He's date, bored. Do you think he was just trying to show them that she's actually quite a nice person? Not, he wasn't just being naive.
He's just trying to... I think he's trying to just... get his wicked way. I can't see any other reason why he would. He's not thinking at all. He's not thinking. He's just thinking of one thing.
What is that that Dell's just given Brenna to hide?
Spare tyre.
A spare tyre.
It's an odd spare tyre.
I used to think it was a lifesaver.
Yeah.
I thought that as well, until you can quite clearly see now there's paper wrapped around it.
No, I think there is one of those in this scene as
I think there is, yeah.
I've watched this episode for a long time.
Leonard Pierce plays it so well, just doesn't know what to do, does he? No. He gets just confused by the whole thing.
He's walking around with that spare tyre for ages.
He literally doesn't know whether he's coming or going.
Dale's got their new record, released yet. Oh, yeah, so walking on the moon.
He drops a minute a few times.
He's got a police record.
Yeah, that's it. There's so many good lines in this episode.
That's a classic.
Looking at two. She does come across as quite intimidating, but I don't know if it's because they've built up the whole thing.
I don't think she comes across as intimidating at all. They're just making it seem like it is.
I don't know. I feel the vibes of intimidation because she's a police officer and they're in the flat where there's a load of stolen stuff and she's probably already clocked half of it.
Yeah, I don't think she's been intimidated.
No, no, probably not personally, but she's a police officer. They're not always off duty, are they?
Yeah, Rodney is just like an absolute kid now. He's just putting his foot in his mouth, left, right and centre.
Well, everything that the Trotters do is hooky, isn't it? One way or another. It's either come off a bend in Dusseldorf or it's been sold to them hooky down the market or something. So it's hard to have a conversation, isn't it, without stitching yourself up.
I like it when they all say they've been to a different place on holiday to collect the record.
We toured.
Dell probably doesn't endear himself to him making a joke about the Rodney tried to enter the police force after he failed the intelligence test.
Yeah, nice one.
I think this is Dell's fault that he's brought her back, because he should have given the pep talk to him a long time ago when he started dating. Like, worst case scenario, never bring back.
Is it a slip up in this scene? It wasn't there. He drops the glasses and hears something go smash.
I generally can't remember.
There you go.
Yeah.
One of the glasses gets snapped onto the set and smashed, but David and Nicholas, being professionals, just completely ignore it and get on with their lines.
In fact, Nicholas Lyndhurst looks down, I don't know why I say his full name, Rodney, he looks down, doesn't he, like, oh, what happened there? But it just carries on, it's brilliant.
What's strange is that where they're stood in the flat right now, because they're not at the cocktail bar, they're kind of near the doorway entrance to the hallway. We wouldn't be making the drink right there, because we see a shot of them, don't we, with the...
So that door behind Nicholas Lyndhurst, that's the kitchen?
No, that's not.
Oh, that's the door they come
the entrance,
in.
That's yeah.
Oh, yeah, so they're still in front of the bedrooms.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the only place they really could stand together. But then they couldn't stand there that whole time.
That's interesting. So would that mean that wall has been taken away for the camera rig to go there?
Yeah, but then they must have stopped recording and they had a back shot of them where they're clearly in front of the hallway.
Yeah, must have just rebuilt the set.
The least subtle thing Dale could do right now to try and get the watch back that Rodney's given to her.
It's not a bad plan, though. What else would you do?
It's not the plan as such, it's the way he goes about it. Good job she looked away for that split second just to purposely chuck it all over her.
But is it gym-proof?
He's really, really trying, isn't he, Dale? Mm.
Market traders, though, are really witty, aren't they? They would have all the lingo because they'd have to use everything in their arsenal to be able to sell the product that they're selling.
Everything's off the cuff, isn't it? For every scenario, they got it ready.
So at this point, Delboy's got the watch back and they think that they're in the all clear.
Yeah.
Until Rodney puts his foot in it again.
Yeah, typical Rodney.
Well, in that moment, he's trying to show off, isn't he? Like, look at all the booze we've got.
he's just not thinking there.
He's not, but he's forgetting
what's hooky and what's not.
Everything is. Yeah. It's almost impossible.
They could have gone around the whole house and, you know.
Yeah.
Have you got a flannel? Yeah. Well, not that one. They've got a box from out there.
Yeah, that one was stolen from a hotel.
That last shot was quite interesting. I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but I don't know if it was written that way or David Jason just improvised, but he walks right past the camera, but offset after he calls Rodney a plonker.
Well, he's probably, in their world, he's walking into the hallway just to get out of the room. He's just out of facer. When we're back at Sandra's place then, do you think she was always going to, you know, confront Rodney about the stolen stuff? Was she already wound up enough to bring that up, or do you think she could have easily have left it?
I think she's probably been thinking about it the whole journey back, and she's been weighing up, should I let it go, or should I say something? But I need to almost get him on my own before I bring it up.
They kind of have a bit of a smooch, don't they? And
it's really awkward, though, isn't it? It's awkward to watch. But even after everything that happened in the Trotter flat, he says, oh, your uniform, do they let you bring it home?
Yeah.
Well, it's a continuation of Rodney's infatuation with women in uniform.
Yeah.
We learned a little bit about it when they went up west, and we're learning a little bit more now.
I don't know what it is, but I think Rodney looks younger in this series than series one. It's just because, I don't know, they styled his hair differently.
It's like a haircut, isn't he?
He just looks like...
His face looks really youthful, doesn't it?
A choir boy almost, isn't he? In the first series, a bit more punky, wasn't he?
Yeah, I guess his hair's a bit scruffier, isn't it?
I didn't quite understand when I was watching this for the first time, many, many, many years ago, that's a fair cop, and he puts his hands out. I didn't quite know, even though it's obvious.
Yeah.
Didn't know what it meant. I thought he was asking for some money towards the date, because he thought, well, I've got nothing else to lose, may as well try and get some money back. That's, you know, that's the 8-year-old me talking there.
I think Sandra could have easily arrested him, and she's seen enough evidence in the flat to arrest him there and then, but she's given him... Well, she's not even giving him the benefit of the doubt. It's a gesture, isn't it, to say she's not going to arrest him and she's going to give him 24 hours to get everything out of the flat.
It'd be extremely harsh if she did arrest him now, because, A, it's 11 o'clock at night and she's not even working.
I think they have a duty, though, to... don't quote me on that, but I'm sure that officers of the law have a duty to act when necessary.
Yeah, they're never off work, are they?
Yeah.
Them sorts never have duty, son.
I feel sorry for Rodney. He's genuinely gutted, doesn't he? He looks like he really liked her, and he's just a bit upset with how things have gone.
And then suddenly it's all dawned on him that he's going to have to go back to Del Boy and tell him.
He's even turned around and said, will I see you again?
Yeah, of course you will.
This goes to show how naive his character is, I think, in this series.
Rodney, 24 hours is better than nothing.
He really does fall in love too easily, doesn't he?
And... The episode's not far finished. Again, it's only a three-scene episode, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 25 minutes.
What's flat, 20 minutes? Their flat, because Sandra's flat, back at the flat. Yeah, it's nearly a half-an-hour episode. Mm. It goes quick because, you know, it's so funny. I'm
gonna kill you, Rodney. A little bit violent for 2019, isn't it? Rodney getting strangled by Dell, saying that he's going to kill him.
Where do you think they put all of this stuff?
Garage.
The allotment.
No, but then the garage is still part of the warrant. They'd still go, have you got a garage?
Granddad's allotment, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Or they might know it.
Trigger's house. Trigger might be smart enough to take it.
They might be pals with one of the neighbours and they could use their garage.
It's true. But look, it must have taken bloody ages to get
out. How extreme is that? Everything, I mean, it's part of the joke, but everything is gone.
Even the rug.
The only other time we see the flat that bare is when they've won the millions.
Yeah, and back right at the end. That must have been an absolute nightmare to have to remove all that.
Mm. So I guess if they had a sequel to this episode, we've spoken about sequels to what would a sequel look like after a certain episode. Mm. Sandra would have come round with the police officer and her boss, inspected the flat, and signed off as fine, left them to it.
But it's caused them an inconvenience, I think.
Yeah.
Which is what Sandra wants, really. And Rodney, just when he thought he couldn't put his foot in his mouth anymore, he asks for some of the aftershave, just in case Sandra comes around a bit early.
I'm going to kill you.
Come here. Now, come here.
Penny didn't quite drop from it again. I was a kid, a lot went in my head. I thought, what's the significance? He's only asked for some aftershave. What's wrong with that?
We're at the end of the episode.
That's gone super quick, isn't it?
That's gone quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Jolly Boys podcast, Mr. Daniel Peacock.
Hello, Daniel.
So, Daniel, we know you as an actor, writer and director. You've also had a double BAFTA nomination for a series you worked on in 1999 called Harry and Kosh, which was for Channel 5. But for the purpose of this podcast, most memorably, we know you as playing the character Mental Mickey Maguire in the episode It's Only Rock and Roll, But Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah.
Tell us how it felt for you playing such an iconic one-off character in Britain's biggest sitcom.
Well, I didn't realise at the time, obviously, because it was just a few days, you know, and I didn't realise at the time it was going to be, it was years and years, well, I don't know, was it 35 years later, I'd be talking about it. So I didn't realise at the time, I did my best. Remember, I've got John Sullivan's lines to say, and they're always razor sharp and brilliant. So,
yeah.
I was kind of a few steps ahead with his, you know, because I had his material. So yeah, and I'm very very sorry. I lost the question again.
Yeah, sorry. I know it's quite a long-winded question, but the main part of the question was how did it feel for you playing such an iconic one-off character in the episode?
Playing such an iconic character, yeah, it was wonderful. I mean, remember, I had John Sullivan's great lines to be working with. It was only a few days, and here we are, many years later, talking about it. So,
well, you did play the character extremely well. You know, you know, everyone knows who you are. You're just a one-off part in Only Fools and Horses, but you know, it's a testimony to your acting and your abilities.
Yeah.
Very, very kind. Thank you, very kind indeed. I always do my best, and hopefully on that particular occasion, my best was good enough.
You were fantastic. We're really, really pleased to have you on this podcast because we've been to conventions before and we've had several of the cast members on here, but we just never thought we'd be able to get hold of you.
So
we are really, really pleased.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm very pleased to be doing it. Wonderful.
Brilliant. Okay, the second question is, do you have a favourite memory of working on the show or any sort of behind-the-scenes gossip you could give us about what happened that fans out there might not know about?
Well, I actually mentioned this once before. I think my favourite member, it was all great fun. I mean, it was great fun doing the songs and, you know, working with David Jason was fantastic. But I think the best ones, as I say, I've said it before, was when we were at Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
And we were doing that. And I think, and Spandau Ballet, because it was really Top of the Pops.
I mean, wow.
I was going to ask you that because I wasn't sure if it was a set or if you were actually there.
No, we were there. It was Top of the Pops recording night,
and amazing.
All the bands that were on that night were there. All the bands were there. It was a real Top of the Pops recording, and Spandau Ballet were there, and they were all walking down there, and because we all had the same suits, so we looked like a band, and they just seen us performing a song.
Yeah,
they assumed we were a real band. I mean, no one told. It wasn't announced. This is for Fools and Horses. It was a. We just got up and started singing our song, and we were introduced as a bunch of Wallets, and off we went. And everyone seemed to like the song. So we came off and spent the ballet there, and they said, that was great. They said, yeah, how you doing? David Tulis, who was in the band as well, you know, a brilliant actor.
Yeah.
And he said, I think we're natural number five, aren't we? So we all went, I thought we were number seven. The one that Spatter Valley goes, hang on, we're number seven. So
classic.
We started this conversation, but they started really getting quite wound up because they thought they were number seven.
Yeah.
So, oh my God.
So we sort of skulked away thinking, we just caused a bit of trouble to the Spandau boys. but I always remember it because it was so easy to wind up. That always made me laugh.
One amazing story. So the song that a bunch of Wallies wrote, which became successful, was called Boys Will Be Boys.
That's right, yeah.
Was there actually a full song written that we've not heard?
I think it was to be honest with you, I think it was like a two-thirds length song.
Right, okay.
There was certainly more, John Sullivan wrote the song and the lyrics, and I actually sung it live, I remember.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it wasn't pre-recorded, it was, the backing track was recorded, so the guys played playing the instruments were miming their instruments, so to speak. But the actual vocal was I did live.
Right, okay.
So, as I remember, this was a long time ago, I remember there was probably three or four verses, and you had the same chorus. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it was 3.5 minutes. It was probably about 2 minutes long.
I would have loved to have seen the full footage of you guys performing on Top of the Pops. I wonder if it exists.
Who knows? Maybe it still exists somewhere in the BBC archives. I don't know.
I stand by though. It's a great song.
Yeah, sure. No, I still remember it today, funny enough. And I haven't seen that episode for a long, long time. But somehow it's certainly in my memory.
Yeah. So were you a fan of the show when you auditioned for the part? How did it all come about?
No, I was a big fan, yeah. I think it was, what, series 3 or 4, wasn't it, something like that?
Yeah.
I was a big fan. Yeah, I mean, it was against John Sullivan, and it was basically what the treatise, Ray Butt, called me into my friend. I said, do you meet Ray Butt regarding the part in Fools and Horses? So I went into to what I thought was going to be an audition.
Right.
And I'd done some TV stuff before, but it was nothing particularly major. And he sat me down at the desk, just me and him, me and my bum, and he said, have a read of that, Dan. So I started to read. I said, which part? I said, middle mini part. So I went, okay, so I started to read it. And he went out to get some coffees, but in the stage direction, it actually said, and I wish I'd kept the script, it actually said, Middle Mickey, the part should be played by an actor like Daniel Peacock.
Wow.
And I thought, would be like that. I'm me. So how can I'm like me.
Yeah.
If it wasn't like me, why don't they ask me? And when Ray Butt came back in with a bit of a smile, he said, we fancy doing it? I went, yeah, of course I want to do it. Well, come on, let's do it. So, he wasn't one of the other things, but what I was really pleased about was that John Sullivan actually was aware of me. So that was...
Oh, that must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was great. It was great.
Wow, okay, I'm just going to hand you over to Ed. He's got a question for you.
Hi, Dan. Okay. I the question I've got to ask is, have you got any special moments that perhaps happened behind the scenes that are really special that you could share with the listeners?
Well, behind the scenes, I do remember on the night shoot, which is when we come out of the
the pub.
The club.
Yeah.
And it's a fight and everything like that. We had our white suits on. I remember quite vividly actually turning up, and it wasn't dark yet, and I had to wait for night time, so to speak. And they put me in a little sort of trailer thing, not a smart trailer. And they said, because I wasn't actually right, my bit even in that scene wasn't until the end of the scene.
No.
I just sat there, literally waiting. As you want to know, is you spend a lot of time waiting. And I was, just sort of waiting, and I had a newspaper to read, which I read about 3 or 4 times. But I do remember every couple of hours, Dave Jason used to come in and said, you're all right, you're okay, Dan? And I went, yeah, fine. I remember thinking, why does he keep coming in and saying, are you okay, And what I put it down to eventually was that he was just making sure that all the sort of guest guys that came on were always happy to be on set. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, nice.
He could have set an assistant in or something, but he came in himself, and I always thought, what a top man.
Yeah.
That's really lovely. Yeah, that's really, really nice.
It was great.
Genuine.
That's a little fond memory I always have.
That's a lovely memory, lovely memory to have, isn't it? We've interviewed quite a few cast members on here, and they've all gave us similar stories to you in regards to Only Fools and Horses. It was like a little family to them, and they have such lovely memories, and they all got on, and they were just a lovely, tight-knitted community of people.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, hi there, Daniel. It's Tom here. Nice to speak to you. Hello. I got you also appeared in one of my favourite other comedies, Porridge, in the movie as Rudge.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to know what was it like on set with the great Ronnie Barker, I suppose. How did that compare to Fools and Horses?
Fools and Horses, I did, was a few days. The Porridge film was 6 weeks. So there was a slightly different feel about it, obviously, and a slightly larger feel because it was all on the location
work. Yeah.
I think I was only 20 when I did that. I think maybe 21.
You're quite young, yeah.
Yeah, so I was. But naive young idiot. And actually, I was in real life a naive young idiot. So, fair enough.
For a feature film, it's brilliant there. For Porridge, one of my favourite comedies, that was, for a feature, was excellent.
Well, again, that's not all of it, by any means, but a lot of it was down to the great writing of Clement Ian Fleming.
Yes.
They were such great guys, and such good writers, and likely lads as well. They're the top guys.
And you obviously play those sort of feisty, hard-nut characters very well. I don't know if you like that in real life or not, but on screen, it's very convincing.
I'm not particularly feisty in real life.
You know? You don't sound it.
No, I used to be feisty, I'm older now. So
yeah. You've had a fantastic career. You've starred in films such as Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, yeah. Quadrophenia, Doctor Who, One Foot in the Grave, just to name a few.
Yeah.
What role do you get recognised for most out and about?
It's either the Fools and Horses, or it can be Prince Thieves is quite a big one. But I also about a show called A Teenage Hell Freak,
where yep.
I played the father, and I get quite a bit of that as well.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you ever take part in any Fools and Horses conventions?
I do. Yes. Yeah. I've done a few. Three or four, I think.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. That's good to know, because I know a lot of our listeners are really interested in going to these events. So have you got any in the pipeline?
Not at the moment. I mean, I don't do them all. I mean, I'm sure that there will be some more conventions, but not that I'm aware of, to be honest. I mean, but that's me.
Of course.
I think they do them every, with at least one big one a year. So I'm sure if they look online, they'll see there's a convention coming up.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's loads of our listeners who would love to meet you and get their photograph taken and grab a signature. I believe acting runs in the family.
Yeah.
So when did you decide to become an actor, and how did that come about? Was it something that was formed organically, or were you inspired by your dad?
Well, my dad, my brother also, Harry Peacock, he's doing brilliantly well. He's a very, very fine, much better than me. A comic and dramatic actor. He's a great guy.
Ray Bloody Purchase.
That's right. And my dad, obviously, who would have had a massive influence on me, unbeknown to myself.
Yeah.
But I kind of was a student. I mean, I came out of school at 15 when I had no qualifications. But I had a great school time because I did a lot of sports. So I do remember my school days fondly. But I just was, because I'd see Danny shows and musicals that he'd written and was in, and I was I just assumed I would move into that world. But I actually started out. I went to drama school when I was 18. Nearly 18.
Okay.
But it was far too young really to go, because you're up against me. Dealing with other students who are like 26,
yeah,
and have know a bit more about the world than a 17-year-old. So it was country, and I just wasn't able to, and I got kicked out after about a year.
Oh dear!
It was thank God really, because the guy that also got kicked out with me, called Liam Galvin, who's a great guy. Him and me started a double act, and we called the Diamond Brothers, and we went and did Pontins and Northern Clubs and stuff like that, which was a great grounding, if you will,
yeah,
in live performance.
Yeah.
So I did that for a few years, and then I but funny enough, I'd actually been writing a play called "Nothing to Do with Toothpaste," which since I was 16.
Wow. I've
been doing it on and off, and then suddenly Leicester Haymarket. I sent it in when I finished it, and Leicester Haymarket did it, and that was my first time I actually sold some work, and I was like 21, 22, and to see your work actually performed by, a very good actor was, I think, really gave me the writing a big time. So I then wrote a short film called Party Party, which was a short film, a short version of what eventually became a feature, and I was in it, but it was from that short film that people, because the director then sent that short film about to get directing work, but people liked what I was doing in it. So that's how I then started to actually do quite well. So everything that has been good for me in my life, if you will, career-wise,
yeah,
always comes from writing
Oh, that's really interesting. Hmm. That is really interesting.
I think, I'll be honest with you, I think, because John Sullivan, I've done a few jobs for John after Fools and Horses, and he you know, we had a few chats, and he was aware that I also wrote, and he liked what some of the stuff I'd written, and him being a far better writer, but he was very interested in the whole how a young man and how he goes about writing, what was I writing about?
Right.
He sort of not took me out of his wing by his stretch of imagination, but he certainly was encouraging, if you will,
yeah,
for me to write more. So I'm coming with you. Question now, or
we're
just talking?
We're just generally talking about your acting career, but to talk about something else, for the listeners who might not know, your dad, who is an actor, he's probably best known as Jim from The Vicar of Dibley.
That's right, yeah.
And your brother, Harry, probably is most currently in Toast. It's Toast of London, who plays a character called Ray Purchase, and also you're in Toast, aren't you? You're in, what, is it one episode?
I got a phone call and they said, do you want to come to the audition? Yeah. I thought Harry was going to be there, and he wasn't on that day.
Oh, really? It was a really nice surprise to see you on there, actually, because we're all fans of Toast of London, and we were not expecting you to sort of like pop your head up. So, yeah, it was good to see.
To be honest with you, I hadn't seen Harry up there for a couple of years before that, and I really thought, oh, great, Harry will be there, and he wasn't, so... Anyway, there we are.
Oh,
yeah, Harry's a great actor.
Yeah, no, he is. He's fantastic, as are you. Going back to a bunch of Wallies, if they were around today, what do you think they'd be doing?
Well, I would imagine my character would be in prison.
Yeah, yeah, we thought the same.
How do you think...
Phil Collins would have beaten them, I would imagine.
How do you think Mental Mickey would have fared against the Driscoll brothers in a fight? Who would have won that one?
Mental Mickey would have won.
Oh, absolutely not. Double R. So, as a writer, though, it's quite a common question. What's your general advice for budding writers out there?
Don't get started. So I cannot believe how it's. Listen, it's. In all seriousness, it's maybe not for the podcast. It's so effing difficult.
Yeah.
I actually thought when the Sky, all the Channel 3, when all the channels exploded, but suddenly it went from being 5 to like 105.
Yeah.
I really thought, oh, God, this is the time when, you know, the script is going to be everything. But in fact, it actually, the whole situation has imploded upon itself, and money became even tighter.
Yeah,
and it's a very strange situation. I'm not quite sure, and this isn't just me. I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people.
Yeah,
it's, no one's quite sure what's going on. I mean, I'm not going to slag anyone off, even though I certainly would like to.
We can edit it out.
There we go. So it's. I mean, this is why I want to do that, the crowdfunding thing, because, and so many people are now, you know, because you can't.
It's just the way, isn't it?
Many years ago, you could go into various broadcasters, you know, a coffee, and you'd have a conversation and discussion about what they were after and what you thought you could bring to that.
You
wouldn't be paid any money. You'd go away and you'd write up a pitch idea, or you'd be pitching an idea. But there was always conversation, if you will, and therefore things were evolving, developing. Whereas now, there's just no conversation.
No, it's sure.
Slams shut. And all there are lots and lots of buffers put in the way of anything ever being made. But things are made. I had a show a couple of years ago on UK TV.
Marley's Ghost.
That was
brilliant.
Two series of that. Yeah. So that was, you know, so things are, it's not all doom and gloom.
No.
But it is certainly much trickier. But to the young writer just starting out, I would say, I suppose you've been forgotten.
It's hard to give advice, isn't it, for something so where you're creating your own stuff.
The advice I want to give is not, you know, someone hears it or think I'm a subversive, so
yeah,
I don't want to get into that particularly. But the thing is just to have complete faith in writing. And one good thing I'll say, which is even if you write stuff, you're writing, and it doesn't get made, if you will, and don't be disappointed because you're always learning. Even when you're writing and it doesn't get made, you personally still learnt about writing.
Yeah, some good advice.
The more you write, the better you will actually become. Unfortunately, you might not be seeing any proceeds from that.
No.
But to help you support you, but you're always getting better, and eventually, if you just keep going, you will get something made.
And you could still be proud of the work you write, even if it doesn't get commissioned or whatever. And
But the whole point is, it's not just the money. It's also people who write stuff have a point. They do it because they're passionate about it.
Absolutely.
It's a financial thing. So you do want people to actually see the work or be able to read the work. So you want it made. You've got to meet people who are like-minded producers and things like that. Unfortunately, there's very little conversation going on at the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
Going back to your character, Mental Mickey Maguire, in Only Fools and Horses, your character was quite intimidating, I think it's probably fair to say. Did that work to your advantage when walking around in the street? Did you find that fans got a bit intimidated and didn't sort of approach you and ask you for autographs, or was it the complete opposite?
No. I like to think that even though that particular character was, as you say, quite intimidating and a bit vicious, necessary. And I've also played similar sort of parts every now and then over the years. I like to think that. I also do it with a degree of endearment, if you will. Hopefully,
yeah.
No one really believes I'm a bad guy. I like to think that anyway, because I'm not a bad guy.
No, sorry,
to be honest, no one's ever attacked me or anything like that.
Oh, that's good. No fights in the Shamrock Club recently, then.
No, not recently.
Well, that's really, really good to hear. So, do you have a favourite episode of Only Fools and Horses, Daniel?
Yes, it will be my one.
that's a very good answer.
To be honest with you, I think it's the nightclub singer one with the R's.
Oh, Tony Angelino, Stage Fright.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good choice. That is a fantastic episode.
I really love that actor that played Tony Angelino.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah, that is a really, really good scene. How was it working with Nicholas Lyndhurst? Because presumably you spent a lot of time with him, probably more than David Jason, I'm guessing.
Yeah, he was great. Nicholas was great. He's a real pro, a really funny guy. Really nice, really welcoming, like they all were. You know what I mean? Because we were just there for a couple of days. He was much like David Jason, he was a top man.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Really good guy.
I do wish he had some cymbals, though.
Of course. Yeah, I remember.
Well, it's all really lovely to hear that you've got such nice memories of working on the show.
Oh, well, I certainly have, definitely.
Brilliant. Not, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but we're wondering if you could give us a Mental Mickey Maguire quote for our listeners.
Yes, I could. What, 1, 2, 3, 4, is that one I could do?
That would be grand.
Absolutely love it.
That's made our year, Daniel. That's incredible. That's incredible. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We are so unbelievably grateful for you giving up your time, and we're a huge fan of your writing and of your acting. So yeah, we're just really, really pleased to have you on.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniel.
Good evening. All right, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks, Daniel.
Cheers,
Daniel. Bye. Bye. Bye.
This week, we're doing a quiz in-house. We thought it would be a bit spontaneous, keep it like the old days. And Bailey is going to be playing James this week.
Yes.
The quiz is solely on this week's episode, The Long Legs of the Law. So, as it usually stands, I'll be reading three questions each. So it's a short quiz, and if it's three all, we get to a tiebreaker. And in that scenario, it would be the first one to answer. Okay? So one at a time. Who wants to go first?
You go first, Bailey.
I'll go on then.
Bailey, question one. Da-dum. What booze did Dale try to hide from Sandra during the scene where Rodney had brought them back from holiday?
Gin.
Correct.
Very good, Bailey. 1-0.
Bravo.
Get it.
Jim, question one.
Yes. No, gin was the answer to question one.
Your question one, mate. Go on.
Nice. Nicely played.
Nicely played.
Go on. Your question is, what does Rodney accidentally drink which caused him to be sick?
What does Rodney drink?
Accidentally drink to cause him to be sick.
You don't know.
Do you know what? I haven't. Oh. It's on the end of my. Stuck in the back of my brain now. Oh.
Gonna have to hurry you.
I don't know.
Well, is that. Oh no, I'm about to, I should say. Sorry. So, James, that's official. You know, you want to hand it over to Bailey. Bailey, you won't get a point for this, but let's just test your knowledge.
What have you done with my Sturdin?
Correct, Sturdin.
Oh.
That remains, the score remains 1-0.
Yo!
Bailey's second question. How long does Sandra give Rodney to clear out the flat prior to a full police inspection?
That's an easy one. What's Rodney's name?
48 hours, next.
Say final answer.
Yep.
Incorrect.
Oh!
It's 24 hours.
Oh, you didn't hand it over.
Poo.
Come on, next question.
Pretty professional, Tom.
Okay, James, your second question.
Go on.
Sorry.
Is it difficult?
No. What newspaper is Del reading in Sid's cafe?
Is it the Sun Mirror? No, Financial Times.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
You are. Correct.
Yes, get in there.
You thought about it, didn't you? You thought,
I said Sun and Mirror. No, yeah. Financial Times, so I just remembered,
yeah. I dropped a point.
So, that's 1-1.
Yeah, Chelsea dropped 3 on Tardo.
Well, she never sold Greensy, should they?
Your third and final question.
No pressure, baby, right?
No now, for this
at all, myself.
Before I go into this question, the answer's quite long.
Great, can't wait. Yes.
So I don't know how I'm going to score it. So this is a case of remembering the quote, okay?
Go on then.
Just one.
Ooh. Can you name what Del Boy ordered for his breakfast in Sid's calf?
No, I bloody can't. No, I'm not even going to try to attempt to reel off everything that he
so
ordered.
So simple.
Go on, James.
Go on, James.
Bacon, sausages, fried bread, chips, mushrooms, toast, beans.
You're already wrong.
Am I? What was it?
I'll reel back exactly what he says.
All right.
Sausage, bacon, double egg, beans and tomatoes.
Yeah, I was going to say the other egg in a minute.
Mushrooms, black pudding and chips.
What's your cut-off point?
Three teas, two bread. Bread was toasted. And then he says, take that back. I'll have some of those biscuits down there.
Okay.
So is that still 1-1?
Yeah.
So if you get this one, we'll do the tie.
And I win. Oof. No, if I get this right, I win.
Sorry.
You thought you should be
1-1, aren't you? It's a good question, isn't it?
This is going to be super confusing for everyone involved.
This is always like our
day one quiz.
Yeah.
Okay. James, what does Rodney ask Del for in aid of Sandra's impending visit with the police?
Aftershave.
Correct.
Yes! Come on! Yes! Bailey.
Yes, I knew what you were going to say.
Yeah. Bailey, for the fun of it, do you want the tiebreak question?
Go on then.
It's all right, Rodney.
So, Bailey, Sandra gives Rodney 24 hours grace in order to spring clean the flat.
Yeah.
She goes on to justify why she does this due to the date they went on. What were the reasons for this?
You did buy me a doner kebab.
That's one. There's two more.
Oh, yeah, and... Oh, what is it?
So, doner kebab.
Oh, yeah, the watch, which Rodney says.
Yeah,
but no, she says... Forget the watch.
She says two other things. So, yeah, two more.
You don't know.
I don't know, I can't remember. Taxi ride home or something?
Took her to the pictures, doner kebab.
And not handing that one over then, Tan.
So, well, you've won. And Rodney chimes in with packet cashews.
Oh, yeah.
end of the episode then, boys. Ed, how do you rate that episode out of 10?
We give that a 7. Some classic one-liners in there, but not an absolute beaut. But yeah, it's a joy to watch, so I'm going to give that a 7 out of 10 for me.
Tom, what about for you? About 2, isn't it?
Right, well, if we're doing it as a whole, then it will be something like 3 or 4 out of 10. But if we're doing it on this series alone...
Interesting.
Just try to remember the other episodes in the series. It'd probably be a 5 or 6.
What about you, Sam? What about you, Bailey?
I'm sort of close with Ed. I'm probably going to go for an 8. I think it is interesting. And the fact that it's only shot in 3 locations and it's all fairly simple, but it does keep my imagination the whole duration of the episode. Yeah. I think that's quite a clever thing to do. So I've got a lot of respect for John Sullivan and the people who shot it. And it's a good story. So yeah, I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah, I'm going to go 8.1 as well. And I think it's a really, really strong episode. I think the storyline's good. Tom's good. Tom can't believe it.
I had to quit. I thought that's a fair cop.
No, very good. I think. But I think the way all the lines are delivered in the episode panned out really, really well.
There are some cracking lines in there, one-liners.
What was your favourite one-liner?
Oh, that's a good question.
For me, it's got to be he's got a police record. It's walking on the moon.
Yeah,
it's clever. It's really clever, Garrett, isn't there? In this, really clever, really witty. I'd like to give a shout out to one of our regular listeners. It is Mikey DFC. Just want to say thanks very much for your lovely comments on Twitter, and we're really glad that you're enjoying the podcast. We'd love to have you on at some point just to chat about Only Fools and Horses, or if you're feeling brave enough, come on and take one of us on with a quiz. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I've also been chatting away to a couple of different podcasts. Since we've been recording a podcast, I don't know about you guys, but I've really got into sort of independent podcasters. I think we've been in touch with a few of them as well, and hopefully we can do some work with some of them as well. But really enjoying the Peep Show podcast, Secrets of the Pharaohs, and also Out of Office.
That's Out of Office, yeah.
You like your office.
Little shout out to Steve and Sam.
We're very lucky now in those guys, because I'm not sure if you've seen on our social media, but we did put a post out the other day listing your 10 favourite comedies of all time, which is quite interesting to see what you guys were into. But in my top 10 personally, and it's Bigley here who put the tweet out, I am a huge fan of The Office, massive fan of The Office, and a huge fan of Peep Show. So listening to those guys' podcasts is, it's just fantastic. They're brilliant for the fans.
Yeah, they're really, really good, and they keep me company on many car journeys throughout the week.
So that's Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs and Out of Office podcasts.
Check them out.
Yeah, do.
But also, we'd really like to hear your top 10 list of sitcoms and British comedies as well. So have a look at our Twitter feed and have a look at that, and feel free to comment and put your top 10 on there, because there's a real mixture of lists that get submitted, which are really interesting.
Yeah, don't be ashamed of what you write, because I know some people on there sort of diehard older comedy fans and they want to see more old stuff. But I like to think I've got quite an eclectic taste of comedies. You know, ranging from the old stuff to the new stuff, but it's perfectly fine if all you like are modern comedies. Just tweet in your favourite 10 and we'd love to see them.
Yeah, I think one list a lady put on there, and she put on there Cheers. I love Cheers. That's
The trouble is, every time I see these lists, I think, I need to put one on mine as well.
It wasn't easy doing my top 10. And as soon as I tweeted it, I was like, oh, what about that? Yeah. Oh, I missed that out. And it was really difficult knowing whether to put extras in there. Because I do really like extras, but I also like Gavin and Stacey, and I was like, oh, which one do I keep it in? So, it was Gavin and Stacey got in the top 10.
Different comedies for different needs, isn't it? I guess. That's one for the Out of Officers.
Right, we will see you next time.
But before that, we best let these guys know that we're on social media and where to find us.
Yeah.
So you can find us on Twitter by searching the handle at OFA_podcast, or you can find us on Facebook by typing in the Jolly Boys Podcast. You can contact us via email by typing in the OFAPodcast@gmail.com. We'd love for you to get in contact with us if you'd like to take part in any of our quizzes. As always, really fascinating and fun for us to meet other fans and just have general chat about Only Fools and Horses, because that's what we love. And I think, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'll have to pass you over to Ed. I think we might have an Instagram page.
That's right. For you Instagrammers out there, if you like to look at good pictures. Quite a few of them are quite rare pictures of behind-the-scenes shots of Only Fools and Horses. We are indeed on there. You're quite right, Bailey. Our handle, or our name, if you like, is Only _ Fools _ _ Horses. Oh, that'll never get old.
So what does that mean, Ed?
It's like and, you know, but someone already took the and _ horses, and I've been trying to buy them out for thousands of pounds, but they weren't having
thousands of pounds.
So it's just an N now, is it?
It's just an N.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for clearing that up.
Well, thanks for listening. Join us next time for Series 2, Episode 2, Ashes to Ashes. Cushy au revoir. Bonjour, even.
Yo!
Adios.
Are we doing another episode?
No.
No.
We got some half-price crack dice, some Mazza Mazza carpet tiles, TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LP, pool games, gold chains, what's his name, the ladder push, some Trevor Rice, some trap shoes from a Moshe Shepherd's bush.
I didn't realise that high note was in there. Strung in a cat.